I've hit record, so hope you got all your cussing out, mother.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the Friends Who Like Stuff podcast, where we talk to friends about the stuff we like. I'm John.
And I'm James.
And each week we're joined by a third co-host to join in on our discussion.
And this week it is our dear friend who also likes stuff.
What's up? This is Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
What's been going on?
Oh, man. Easter's right around the corner, but not until spring break. And that's just March. So, you know, things are crazy, but life is good. And yeah, we're living it up.
Yes, we are. And just to remind everybody, Johnny is a worship pastor at our church. So he and Evan and I work very close together, and it's so much fun.
We used to work much more closely until you moved offices across the building.
I know. I both love and hate it. A little bit more the latter. But anyway, so yeah, Easter is coming up, and so for us, that's crunch time. Every week is Super Bowl Sunday, but Easter is like Super Bowl Sunday.
Super right? Duper Bowl.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Johnny, as long as I have known you, you have been a fan of at least Marvel. I know there's a lot, like, I guess just superheroes. Yeah. There's a lot of DC.
Well, don't say just Marvel, because he used to wear the Superman ring all the time.
John,
that's
remembers.
True.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. That was like a, hey, Superman. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see every church pianist wearing a Superman ring, you know? Kind of a rare thing.
That's right.
Johnny, we've gone to a lot of MCU movies together, and I guess, again, other superhero movies too, but just mostly MCU, because...
That was the only thing worth going to for a long time. Hopefully Deadpool can take us back there once again.
I have faith. I've still not watched... The Marvels.
Just skip
it. It wasn't as bad as everybody said. You just gotta, it's a very lighthearted movie. That's the thing. It's not doing anything crazy. It's just a nice little turn it on in the background style movie.
I should be able to appreciate that more, but I'm a full immersion. I don't want, whenever I'm watching a movie, especially for the first time, I'm going to give it the respect of not doing anything else. My phone's nowhere near me. I don't want to have conversations about anything. I just want to watch the movie. And I feel like it flipped me off the whole time I was doing that.
It's not made for that. It was not made for, you know, the end of a saga style, you know.
Right. Well, I'm
capturing of the audience.
I'm going to watch it. I'm not just going to skip it. I'm sorry, Johnny, but I am going to go in with super low expectations. So my expectations are either going to be met or exceeded, because I don't think they can get any lower. So
that's a safe place to be.
Good. So speaking of comic books, comics, superheroes, whatever, John, what is our top five this week?
Our top five for this week is comic book stories. So this could be an individual comic book, or it could be an entire story arc within a set of comics. We didn't really make many rules around it like usual, so really it could be anything. If you wanted to do a comic book movie, I don't think people would argue with you too much here, would they?
No.
I hope not, because that's the route I went.
Okay. I think that should be allowed, just for funsies. Johnny, you're going to go first with your number five. What is it?
Yeah, so I will confess, I've read many comics. I don't know that I've ever been disciplined enough to read an entire run. And so as someone less disciplined, I've relied on many animated and live action adaptations of comic book runs and stories. But I'm familiar enough with how the comic book run panned out and then the adaptation version. So all that being said, my number five pick is just season one of X-Men, the animated series, and how it adapts the Sentinel story that happens in X-Men inside of that run is The Night of the Sentinels, Days of Future Past, Enter Magneto, and Apocalypse. And I love how all of those stories happen. And I don't remember if I mentioned this, the animated series, the 90s X-Men series, which is getting a revisiting it here in a few weeks. But the animation style is absolutely fantastic. The way that the Sentinels are portrayed and they progressively get more and more daunting, become more and more daunting a villain until you finally meet Master Mold. And and also I just love the commentary that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby wrote into the X-Men on, it was more to do with civil rights whenever the X-Men originally came out. And the Sentinel story, I think, is maybe the best focus of the issue of different people coexisting and learning to appreciate one another and loving one another and not being afraid of one another. And then what happens whenever we are afraid of one another is we destroy each other. So anyways, I like that whole, it's entertaining, it's fun, and also says something important.
Love it. I'm glad that someone had an X something on their list, because I did not. Spoiler alert. But what I did have on my list, that's my number five, my first experience with Swamp Thing was the 1982 movie directed by Wes Craven. And John, do you remember why he's a big deal?
Wes Craven?
Yeah.
Because he did your favorite movies, too.
Which are, this is a quiz. You are getting a grade.
It's a Nightmare on Elm Street. He did, not the first one.
Oh, no. He did. Like, he only did the first one. He only did the first one.
Oh, okay.
And then New Nightmare at the very end. And he wrote part of...
That's what it was.
Nightmare 3. But yeah. But yeah. You get full points, John. I'm proud of you. Anyway, Swamp Thing came out before Nightmare on Elm Street. It's not a great movie, but I still kind of love it anyway. I didn't realize that he was a comic book character until probably around high school-ish. And when I found that out, I sought out his books. And thankfully, I lucked out. And the first books that I read were the Alan Moore Saga of the Swamp Thing trade paperbacks. And because if I had read any of the others first, I might have stopped there, because they're not super great. Like, they're decent enough, but they're not amazing. Because it had a little bit of a rocky start. Not bad. It was in its second volume, and sales were pretty bad to the point of cancellation, but DC took a chance and gave, relatively unknown at the time, Alan Moore the helm. And he just completely revamped the story, created one of the greatest stories ever told on the medium, and also one of the best retcons, because Swamp Thing was human. He was a human scientist, Alec Holland, that died in an explosion at a biochemical research facility in the bayou because of nefarious goings on. And then he became the Swamp Thing. He at one point changed back to human form for a minute before reverting back into the creature. It's kind of nuts, but it is what it is. Alan Moore, when he took it over, started with a quote unquote dead Swamp Thing on an autopsy table. And the autopsy revealed that the creature was never human, that all of the organs were crude vegetative copies. He just somehow, in the creation process, the plants absorbed Holland's memories and his consciousness and everything. And so he thought that he was Holland. Turns out Alec Holland actually really did die in that explosion after all. Anyway, the story that Alan Moore tells is dark. It's intriguing. It's full of characters that we know and love, like Batman and Superman, as well as forgotten minor characters. It is way worth a read. And it's also kind of the genesis for DC's Vertigo imprint. Like, when the Comics Code Authority didn't like one of the issues, DC said, "Forget you," and created the Mature Readers line of books, which later became Vertigo. And so, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, love it. You know, I'm a fan of horror, and so it was kind of up my alley anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So. Also, quick quiz, Johnny. Which came first, Swamp Thing or Man Thing?
Swamp Thing.
I thought so, too, right? For a while. Nope. Man Thing. They came out.
Really?
Their first appearances Their first appearances were months apart. Same year.
Really?
But Man-Thing beat him by like 2 months.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyway,
Alan Moore, Swamp Thing, my number five. Johnny? I mean, John? I can't say that right now.
It's May 1st.
Yeah, yeah. John. Sorry. John, not Johnny.
So, have y'all ever heard of John Jacobs and the Power Team?
Those aren't the guys that ripped the phone books and...
They are the guys that ripped the phone books. They are the strongman exhibitionists that do martial arts and, like, you know, lay on a bed of nails while somebody jackhammers a big block of ice on their stomach, or, you know, stuff like run through boards and stuff like that, rip playing cards and phone books and all sorts of stuff. So they had a comic book that was... I'm trying to remember this. It's so hard to find any information about this on the internet, by the way. But they had a comic book, and it was basically a way for them to promote the message that they were trying to spread, which was an evangelical message, but do it in a way that they could just hand it out at, like, high schools or, like, you know, schools and places that didn't necessarily allow specifically Christian, you know, evangelism. And so it was a comic book where a kid gets kidnapped and the Power Team gets called in, John Jacobs and the Power Team, and they had to go and rescue this kid. And this kid had, like, run away because there was, like, a fight in the family or something like that. And they came back and they repaired. They not only saved the kid, but they saved the family by repairing the bond and strengthening the nuclear family bond between these people. And so it was absolutely ridiculous, but at the time when I was, you know, 8 years old, I thought it was really cool. And I even got, so I think I got this because they, like, were calling people and you, like, just, like, calling people out to, like, hold stuff or whatever, or, like, test a deck of cards. And I don't remember exactly what I did, but I got called up and they gave you a little comic book afterwards, and I went and got all their signatures after. So not necessarily the story of Power Team. I mean, I thought it was really cool at the time, but just like a little throwback neat moment for my number five.
That reminds me of that picture of, you know, the big eye beam that all these superheroes are eating their lunch. And so it's like Spider-Man, Hulk, Batman, Superman, Wolverine. They're all sitting there eating lunch and Jesus is in the middle and he says, "I want to tell you about the time I saved the world." That's what that reminds me of. I love it.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was fun. I think I saw them twice, the Power Team. I think they came to our church and then I think they came to, like, school or something like that. And it was,
they got around, man.
Yeah, they did.
I've seen them.
They
once.
Really did.
Yeah, I think they came to our school two or three times. It was a private Christian school. And yeah, they came and ripped up every phone book we had, man. We couldn't get a hold of anybody.
That's right.
Johnny, what's your number four?
Oh, man.
Well, my number four is the Justice League animated series adaptation of Starcrossed. So this was this was the series finale of the original Justice League animated series before Justice League Unlimited came out. And in this finale, Hawkgirl is finally revealed to be a secret agent amongst the ranks of Earth's mightiest heroes. And her alien brethren finally come to Earth to invade and to take over the planet. They come in as saviors. They're saying that they're trying to defend the planet from this other extraterrestrial foe, but really they come in, lower Earth's defenses, and then come in to take over the Earth. And the whole Justice League is, you know, rightfully very irritated with Hawkgirl and her betrayal. And John Stewart winds up being the most wounded because he and Hawkgirl are in a relationship, and it gets all twisty and turny. But my favorite moment in the whole story arc is the Justice League, they don't know each other's secret identities yet. And so in order to blend into society, they take off their masks. But before they take their masks off, they're hanging out trying to figure out, do I trust these people, because they've just been betrayed by one of their own. And Batman looks around the circle and he lists off everybody's secret identity and just clears the board and says, "You're going to have to trust one another. So it doesn't matter if you want your secret identity out there or not. I'm Bruce Wayne. That's Clark Kent. That's Wally West. And I just love that moment because he's freaking Batman, you know? So yeah, anyways, I think it's a great arc.
Rock on. So my number four is not one of the big two. It is the greatest What If Superman Went Mad story ever told. Are y'all familiar with Irredeemable?
I'm not.
Mm-mm. Nope.
This is written by Mark Waid. And in Irredeemable, Mark Waid rejects the notion that in superhero comics, pretty much everyone who's called upon to put on a cape is at heart emotionally equipped for the job. And unfortunately for the world, the Plutonian was not. The world's greatest hero turned the world's worst villain. Sky City, the basically Metropolis, millions dead. The first issue begins with Plutonian murdering the Hornet and his entire family. And then from there, the Paradigm work to stop him. And it is a great story that I'm not going to spoil the ending of because it won't. It's a great story that I'm about to spoil the ending of because it won't ruin the journey to get there. The Plutonian is defeated. I mean, of course, there's no nihilist ending here. And Iron Man, keep doing that. Cubit, believing that he can still be redeemed, sends his essence into another universe. And in that universe, we see two young men named Siegel and Schuster drawing a character that looks a lot like a hero that we know and love today. And so read it. It's great.
So what was he irredeemable? Doesn't sound like it to me.
He was redeemed as Superman.
Sounds to me like they need to change the title of that.
Okay.
I'll go for my number four now, though. My number four is the Flashpoint Paradox. So this is they made it into, yes, it I know it's the new Flash movie, but it was good before that. It was good before that. It was good in the show. It was good as a DC animated movie, and it was good as a comic. And it wasn't great as a movie. I still enjoyed it because I just didn't like. I love the Flash in most incarnations of him, but so basically, Barry Allen goes back to save his mom and changes the future, and he comes back and everything's different, and he can't figure out, or he has figured out, but he's also lost his powers, and so he has to go through and get his powers back with some help from the world's greatest detective, who's different than what he thought. In this movie, it was just a different version of Batman. In the comics, it was Thomas Wayne, Bruce's father.
Yeah.
So Bruce died in the accident and Thomas Wayne survived. And so he's like an old man kind of, and he doesn't have like, you know, the aversion to killing, and like justice isn't really a thing for, like, it's like the tough justice where he just like kills him. And yeah. So it's a different version of Batman that's not necessarily just feared by the criminals. He's kind of feared by everybody. So it's kind of a neat little take. But yeah, he gets like shocked and stuff. And yeah, from that point, I would say the movie at least somewhat tried to be on it a little bit.
I got to tell you, on the movie side, I knew that this was not the way they were going to go. But I really wanted to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne, Flashpoint Batman.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
And to see, what's her name? From Walking Dead, also, be Martha Kent.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would have just been, or Martha Kent. Martha Wayne.
Maggie.
There. Maggie, yeah. Lauren.
I can't remember her real
Cohen,
name.
Lauren Cohen. Yeah, but
that would have been cool.
Alas, it wasn't meant to be.
No. And you know what? Keaton was great.
My favorite part of the movie.
Yes, he was the best part of The Flash. Him and then Supergirl.
Mm-hmm. And then Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. He didn't even know he was in it.
That's funny.
All right. That's it. That was my number four.
That's my number, the list.
My number three. This was not a comic arc, to my knowledge, because the show itself was born before the comic was born. Batman Beyond, The Return of the Joker. I loved the whole series. Basically, what happened was Spider-Man was blowing up everything in the 90s, and Warner Brothers wanted to compete with Fox. So instead of continuing Bruce Wayne, who's a man in his mid to late 40s, what they wanted to do was have a teenage superhero, but have it be Batman. And so they invented Bruce Wayne, old mentor to Terry McGinnis, teenager who needs some direction and some guidance, but has a good heart. And so he becomes Batman, and the whole series follows that, and it's really great. It's good. Will Friedle, who is in Boy Meets World and now does all these voice actor roles, he's great. He's Batman now. And in the return...
I meant
Batman Beyond, Will Friedle is Terry McGinnis Batman. But Kevin Conroy voiced Bruce Wayne Batman. So you still have the Batman, the animated series. It's actually in that continuity. It's in the same universe.
Right.
So the Mark Hamill Joker is the Joker that returns, and Mark Hamill continues voicing him. And so it's cool to see new characters play off with old ones. And you get some backstory with Robin is very much involved, but it's not Dick Grayson Robin. It's not Jason Todd Robin. It's Tim Drake Robin. And I don't want to spoil the ending because you should just go watch it for yourself. But it's really, really well done. I recommend it to everybody. So yeah, very good.
Rock on. I need to watch it. I've watched a couple of episodes and I think they were with you. I think we were looking for something to put on one day and we put on a couple of episodes of Batman Beyond and I enjoyed what I saw, but I really need to go ahead and watch it. It was a little bit beyond my time of watching a lot of animated stuff.
I've got it all on Blu-ray. I'll bring it to work if we can find a Blu-ray player to play it on so we can watch it lunch.
Nice.
Rock on. My number three also involves young people, teenagers. I do not read a lot of Young Avengers books. I've read quite a few books with members in it, but not a lot of actual Young Avengers issues. But years ago, I was told how great the Children's Crusade story arc was, and so I checked it out, and they were right. It's excellent. And technically, it is the Avengers Children's Crusade. It's not a Young Avengers title, but it is the Young Avengers. It takes place during the aftermath of the House of M and Scarlet Witch uttering those devastating words, "No more mutants." And so we get to see the aftermath of all of the world's mutants losing their powers through the eyes of these kids, two of which are the Scarlet Witch's reincarnated children. And most of the story revolves around the rehabilitation of Wanda and her image. Some crazy crap happens involving Dr. Doom, Jack of Hearts, Scott Lang coming back from the dead, one of the kids learning about and confronting and dealing with the fact that he becomes Kang the Conqueror, or was Kang, or still is, timey-wimey stuff. Not all of the kids survive, and it's a little bit rough, but man, is it a ride. And even if you aren't familiar with all of the characters, it's okay because you learn to love them. But the Avengers Children's Crusade is incredible, and I can't wait to see what the MCU does as they've been introducing all of these characters for the last several years. Some of them are going to be way too old now to be in an actual Children's Crusade arc, but the characters themselves shouldn't be. And I really hope they do something special with it.
At the risk of spoiling it, but for you, James, it doesn't sound like you care too much about this being spoiled. In the Marvels, there's a post-credits scene. Here's your spoiler warning. If you don't want it spoiled, don't listen. Where Miss Marvel is waiting in Kate Bishop's apartment with the lights off, reminiscent of Nick Fury waiting in Tony Stark's mansion, and says, nice. You've become part of a bigger universe. She says the thing. And so
right.
It's like officially unconfirmed at this point.
That's great.
Yeah, and who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
John, what's your number three?
My number three is a little-known hero from the Simpsons universe called Bartman. So Bartman was a character that was introduced in the show, and it was kind of Bart Simpson's alter ego to his that kind of like worked alongside his favorite superhero, Radioactive Man. But then they really did release like six series. I don't think it was actually a whole series all the way through, but it like six comic book issues of Bartman. And I had Bartman number one. It came along with I probably still have the book somewhere. I don't think I have the comic anymore, but Bart Simpson's Guide to Life. For some reason during middle school, I got really into Bart Simpson, and I don't know why. I thought it was hilarious.
That's fun.
I got that and the poster. Yeah, I got the poster Bartman meets Radioactive Man and had that in my room. But anyway, so in Bartman number one, Bart is trying to just pass school, and Miss Krabappel keeps saying that he's going to have to go to summer school. And that's what's going on in his real world. Meanwhile, is investigating a comic book inflation ring, I guess. A group is trying to change the covers of comic books so that they can sell it for a premium. And he is investigating it, and he's going to try to stop this ring of book, I don't know, price gougers or something.
That sounds incredible.
You know what? For a little just goofy spinoff, it was pretty fun.
Dude, I think it's great. I grew up loving The Simpsons. I mean, for a while I wasn't allowed to watch them, but it wasn't really that long. And so I'm a big fan of just about anything Simpsons. I think they are still relevant and hilarious.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to watch it, and I still would feel dirty if I watched it. I've got total access to it. I'm a 32, almost 32 year old man, and I don't feel like that's I can hilarious. Watch The Simpsons.
Well, so the funny thing is, because I mean, you grew up in conservative Bible Belt. The Simpsons were evil. Bart Simpson is not a kid to emulate. The whole family is in anything you want. Like it's just bad and wrong, and it would give you the bad ideas. But really, when you sit down and watch it, it's kind of a wholesome family. Like they're still weird.
It always ends on a high note.
But it has more family values than just about any other adult-y animated series, much more than Family Guy. Family Guy never claimed to have any family values.
Yeah,
but it's really smart and good. I like it a lot. So John, I approve. Not that you need my approval.
We watched it almost every day, me and my family. It was my dad's favorite show, and my mom hated it. But we'd watch it, and then Friends would start after, and we'd watch that until my sister asked, I think she was like in third or fourth grade, and she asked my parents, this is, I didn't know this at the time, but this is why my parents stopped letting us watch Friends. She asked what sex was, because she wanted to make sure she wasn't having it. And she heard that from Friends, and so it was, got cut off after that.
But you were still allowed to watch The Simpsons. Rock on.
We were. Yep.
That's great.
Johnny, what's your number two?
Okay, so my number two, I feel like I've cheated this whole list, so I'm just going to really cheat on this one. But I'm going to call it the Russo brother run in the MCU. Just everything from Civil War to Infinity War to Endgame. So well crafted.
Hey, you're leaving out the best.
Well, I wasn't counting Winter Soldier because at that point they hadn't been given the reins to the end of the saga, you know? Like,
oh, okay. That makes sense.
That wasn't, I mean, it definitely does connect to, it's the connector between the first Avenger and Civil War. But as far as like a continuous an intentional arc. I feel like it, the in-game arc begins with Civil War. And so, but to go back to the comics, I think what needed to happen in the MCU to adapt the comic book story of Civil War was so well executed. I know people have problems with Baron Zemo's representation in the MCU. I get it to a certain extent, but man, the showdown between Iron Man and Captain America, that was where the attention needed to be. So some dude running around in a purple mask, that just kind of, I think, would have detracted. So having Tony and Cap on different sides of an important debate, I think it was great. And then to set up Infinity War as if Thanos needed any help winning the Infinity War, it was cool to see the Avengers not together, and it gave Thanos an even greater edge. And it kind of gave the story that didn't happen as much in the Infinity Gauntlet story. Correct me if I'm wrong, James, but like the snap is the beginning of the comic book story, whereas in the MCU, the snap was the halfway point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was the whole, the Infinity Gauntlet was Thanos going around and getting the stones, but he does that pretty quickly and then snaps. And then, yeah, there's a lot that happens after it, but it is early on, you're right. But to a point you made earlier, I am 100% on board with television and movie writers changing the plot, changing the script from the books. Yeah. Not everything that works on paper works on screen. And I also, for the most part, want to be surprised when stuff happens. I don't want to know everything that's about to happen like you would if you were watching the direct adaptation of, like a literal adaptation of a book. Now, my number one, we'll come back to this. We're going to put a pin in it because I kind of feel differently about that somewhat. And some books I really want it to happen. Like I'm watching Shogun right now. And we talked about that was my number two last week in our books discussion. And I want it to be the book. Mm-hmm. And right now it is incredible. We're three episodes in and I am loving it. Anyway, my number two comic book, not just book. Y'all know my favorite superhero. Anybody who knows me knows my favorite superhero. And of course, he is coming up in number one. Yeah, that's it. It's also no secret who my second favorite is.
Darkwing.
Duck? Johnny?
Is it the Silver Surfer?
It is the Silver Surfer. I love the Silver Surfer. Love Norrin Rad. The Dan Slott run of Silver Surfer is my absolute favorite, and it's relatively new. It's less than a decade old, and I started reading it during the tail end of its run. So like the last six issues or so, I had to wait month to month for, but it was so worth it. Its creative take on the Surfer, where he picks up an Earth girl named Dawn Greenwood and just shows her the cosmos, several cosmoses actually. And it's almost like a Doctor Who type story and a Doctor Who type relationship, like the doctor and the companion. And it turns into a really sweet romance. And here's the crazy thing about this. In this story, Surfer isn't my favorite character. It's Dawn. Her arc over the course of both volumes, which is about 30 issues total, is fun and amusing and heartbreakingly beautiful. And it's rare when a brand new character leaves a mark like she does. Dan Slott created her for this run. Even that might be saying a little bit too much, so I'm just going to go ahead and stop there. But volumes 7 and 8 of Silver Surfer by Dan Slott. Volume 7 is 15 issues. Volume 8 is 14 issues. Just absolutely incredible. The art is also just wonderful. What's your number two, John?
My number two is a 2008 story about Wolverine. It's called Old Man Logan. And this was one of my first intros into the Marvel Online, comic books online. I don't remember what the database is called anymore because I only had it for like a month or so. But I got it so that I could read Old Man Logan, and then I didn't ever finish it. But that's just because I was still in college, and it was hard to commit to anything while I was in college. So Old Man Logan takes place in an alternate universe from the typical MCU universe, where villains have basically won out. And the world is kind of split up into different sections where different villains are ruling, and lives with his family in a section of land that's controlled by the Hulk family, because Bruce Banner has gone crazy from his gamma radiation. And so he's living there, and you don't know why, but he's not going to act like he's a superhero anymore. He just wants to like pay his little tributes to the Hulk gang and live with his family and be fine. But then they can't pay their tax, I guess. And so he has to go on a mission for the Hulk gang where he's delivering this stuff to these other people. Runs into Clint Barton, where he's just a blind Hawkeye, which is in of itself is really, really neat. Knowing, you know, Hawkeye's skill is firing an arrow, and having him do it blind now is really neat. So they go through and they have to kind of fight their way, and they make their way to like this resistance, and then they're selling this super serum. And then Red Skull comes in, and who's the president of the United States. Logan, like they get like captured and killed, but then Logan comes back and he finds himself in like this big room where all these dead superheroes are kind of displayed, not necessarily them themselves, but like their stuff. And so he kills Red Skull and escapes all without using his claws. During all this, you learn that Logan has pretty much vowed never to be Wolverine again, because he was tricked into killing the rest of the X-Men. So that's why he doesn't use his claws. But then when he gets back to his home and family, fully intending to pay off this little debt to the Hulk family, he finds his family killed there. And so he finally comes out, uses his claws, and kills the Hulk family. Except for Bruce Banner Jr., who he kind of recruits to form a new kind of Avengers-esque squad to go take out the other supervillains. And that's how it ends. And I think they made some ones after that too, but I don't know about those. I just ruined it for anybody who wants to read it. But you know what? It's been 16 years. So
there you go.
It's really neat. This is the very loose idea that the fantastic movie Logan was based off of.
Logan is one of my favorite Marvel, superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
Probably top five for me. I guess it came out after the first Deadpool, came out before the second Deadpool, and came out before The Boys. So, like, it was one of the hardest superhero movies. I mean, it was, like, the second R-rated, at least, like, mainstream superhero movie. And I saw it with, y'all probably remember Toby Oleru.
I saw it
in theaters with him. And he's just sitting there with his hands covering his eyes and making, like, oh no. He's just one of the most innocent people on the face of the earth. So, anyways, it was fun watching Wolverine shoot his claws through the bottom of someone's head and then through the top next to Toby. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you also see one of the blades in the mouth?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I'm hoping we get some more of that in Deadpool 3.
I would be surprised. Absolutely shocked if we didn't.
Mm-hmm. I'd be kind of sad if we don't.
I hope we see just one middle claw extended at some point. It's just like a little throwback to the first movie.
If James Marsden is in it, then they have to do that. You know?
Ooh, yeah.
He's one I haven't seen a rumor for yet, though.
Oh, so man.
I've heard Halle Berry, and I've heard, Jean Grey.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't remember her name.
Famke.
Yes. So, I don't know. We'll see, but I'm excited about it. I have no idea how to pronounce her name, but now that you've said it, I can see how it's spelled. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, what's your number one, Johnny?
Okay, so my number one, the reason that I fell in love with superheroes from the beginning, the stakes of good versus evil, and as a young boy that left an impression on me whenever I saw it in Spider-Man, the animated series in the 90s on Fox Kids on Saturday mornings. The run that got me was the Secret Wars run, which is based on the comic book run, the Secret Wars, and it has a pretty strong connection to that story arc. What happens in the animated show is Madame Web, everyone's favorite part of Spider-Man lore. They should make a good movie about that sometime. She's been watching and counseling and giving pointers to Peter Parker, trying to help him be a good superhero. And then it all finally comes out that she's friends with this guy named the Beyonder, and he wants to figure out which is stronger, good or evil. So he recruits a team of villains made up of the Red Skull, Doc Ock, the Lizard, Alistair Smythe, and Victor Von Doom. And he puts them on a planet of totally innocent people. This planet has completely eradicated evil from the face of their world. And so the Beyonder then introduces evil back into their society, and they just get overrun and decimated. And then he fast forwards time and brings Spider-Man into the mix. And instead of choosing a team for Spider-Man, he lets him choose his own team. So for me, this was kind of my first introduction into multiple franchises intersecting and playing with one another. So Spider-Man recruits the Fantastic Four in its entirety. He recruits Storm. I was so disappointed he didn't recruit Wolverine whenever I was a boy. That made me so mad. I was like, why would you recruit Storm? But anyways, he recruits Black Cat, Captain America, and Iron Man. He ultimately wins over the Kirk Connors side of the Lizard. So he gets another ally that way. Hawk and Red Skull kind of cancel each other out. They're so ambitious in and of themselves, they kind of ruin each other's plans. So really, he's just left with Alistair Smythe and Red Skull. Alistair Smythe is easy to handle. I said Red Skull. I meant Dr. Doom. And watching all of these heroes go up against Dr. Doom kind of on this battle world arena was so cool. And ultimately, obviously, good does win. And the Beyonder kind of leaves them all alone. But not until Madame Web brings Peter Parker into the real world to meet Stan Lee. And that was how Spider-Man the Animated Series ended so far. And I'm hoping they'll bring a revival back, like a Spider-Man 97 type thing. It would be pretty sweet to see where that story goes from there. But yeah.
So I didn't watch this particular, like I watched some of the animated Spider-Man. I didn't watch the Secret Wars stuff. So that sounds really awesome. Do we get the black suit like in the books?
No, they didn't go down that route.
Okay.
Yeah. They deal so much with Venom at the beginning of the series, and they kind of just have all that resolved. He comes back for one brief little stint with Dormammu, and Doctor Strange isn't involved with it, but he kind of is the foil to Dormammu. Venom is Eddie Brock. And then they don't bring back the black suit thing. I think probably they came up with the idea of, oh, we should adapt Secret Wars after they'd already done the black suit.
That makes sense.
Thing. So
that makes sense. Well, awesome.
But it's great. You should watch it. It's on Disney Plus. So
I've got that. That's a great pick, both, I guess, animated series and definitely also the books. So awesome. I will say I am a little bit surprised, though not completely surprised, that you didn't have a Captain America story in there. There aren't really a whole lot of great just Cap arcs. I mean, the only one that really comes to mind, and it's not a Cap arc, but the best one that comes to mind is Civil War and the death of Captain America.
Yeah, I think Cap doesn't have many great solo stories, but he's an incredible character in the context of the Avengers and the rest of the Marvel Universe. but as a standalone, yeah, unfortunately, because he is my favorite.
Yeah. Well, speaking of favorites, when I sit and actually really think about it, the fact that I became such a massive fan of Daredevil when I did is really kind of unlikely, because the 90s weren't exactly a great time for the man without fear. It had a smattering of decent stories and issues. Like, one of my honorable mentions, it was late 90s, is Guardian Devil, written by Kevin Smith and drawn by Joe Quesada. Last Rights, early in the 90s, was pretty good. And I mean, and don't get me wrong, I loved him, and so even loved the not so amazing stories. I don't know. Anyway, for the most part, my favorite stories just hadn't been written yet, except my absolute favorite comic book arc ever, period. And in the early 80s, Frank Miller did with Daredevil what he would later do with Batman, and he took him from this Silver Age, goofy, amusing superhero, a little bit more child-friendly, to a darker, more emotional, and more human character. And it's in the 6-issue Born Again arc that we get the best of it. Matt Murdock's longtime love interest, Karen Page, betrays him for a shot of heroin and reveals his identity. When Kingpin finds out, he uses everything at his disposal to just break Murdock. He has his bank accounts frozen. He becomes homeless. He is barred from practicing law. He is beaten severely and nearly drowned. And then, broken, he makes his way to a church where a nun nurses him back to health. And we all now know that this nun, Maggie, is his mom. This is her first appearance, and so reading it at the time, of course you didn't know, but it is a hard and for a large portion depressing story, but the payoff is well worth it. And it also has some of Miller's best writing. Like, when the Avengers make their appearance, Johnny, you'll love this, they've rarely seemed more powerful and awe-inspiring than in this story. And in the roll call, we get lines like, "A soldier with a voice that could command a god," showing Captain America. And then the next frame is showing Thor with just the words, "and does." And it is a masterpiece on every level, and every comic fan should read it. There are a lot of quotes. I'm not gonna go with them. But anyway, it's so good. And also, I cannot find my trade. Johnny, did I happen to loan that to you at some point? Like, I've got single issues. I just can't find that trade, and I know I lent it to somebody. I just don't remember who or what.
I was just sitting here thinking, I want to read that one. You mentioned earlier that on your number one pick, you wanted to talk about adapting for video or for TV or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think I know where you're going with this, but I want to hear that.
I want it to be super close to the story, because the story is just so well written and lends itself to film. I think the way it is written, it is a story that deserves to be told the way Frank Miller told it. There are just a few kind of wacky moments, and it would be hard to get the Avengers in, I think. There would have to be some sort of a substitute thing in that specific scene. And it does get a little bit odd with one of the main antagonists at times, but I think that could be done well. But as far as the story of Kingpin breaking down Matt and his comeback, I want it to be that story, just because it is so powerful.
So my question is, because I figured that would be your opinion. They've done a lot of that. They did a lot of that in the Netflix series. I I worry that they might, well, and, but they didn't know that they were going to, that Disney or Marvel would actually connect it all. And I think Netflix did a very good job of adapting Born Again for the Netflix audience, given what they had to play with. But I really want to see, I want to see Born Again in the context of the MCU. So I hope,
yeah,
I hope that you get your wish.
So Netflix had some aspects of Born Again. Like, we did have Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, because it's been so long since I've watched them, if Kingpin learned of Matt's identity. Did he?
He does. He does know. I don't remember if he learned it in season 3 or not, but he does by the end of the season. He definitely knows that Matt is Daredevil, because okay. Matt just takes his mask off and...
Right. And but, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine having him already know and not necessarily doing with Karen what they did with Karen. I'm good with that. With them not turning her into a junkie needing a fix. And if it was Matt that gave away... So, I mean, and you do lose some of the mystery that's in Born Again, where part of it is Matt trying to figure out who is doing this to him and going down one way that is wrong until he learns this. And so you'll lose some of that. I don't really know if maybe they don't keep the continuity of Netflix, let it be its thing. Just the characters and the same actors. I don't know. So
they have said that at this point, they're going to keep it. I don't know. I'm excited. Every piece of Matt Murdock we've seen in the MCU so far has been great. Even if he was only 30 seconds of Echo, it was the best 30 seconds of Echo. So.
it was the best two episodes of She-Hulk.
No doubt. It was not the best moment of No Way Home, but
that's what I was about to say, but it was still a great moment.
I mean, yeah.
So yeah, I didn't even consider that they had already done portions, like some aspects of it in the Netflix series. So now you just...
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to burst your bubble. Johnny. John, what's your number one?
Well, thanks. I'm glad y'all could decide what's going to be in the new Daredevil or not. I'm really looking forward to watching it now and seeing which portions y'all are right or wrong about. My number one takes us back to DC. Back to my first and favorite superhero, Superman. Unfortunately, this is also the death of Superman. And so it was not done well in the Justice League universe. The
Snyderverse.
Yeah, the Snyderverse. It was done though, sort of. Not the whole story, but the death by Doomsday. Superman and Doomsday are fighting, right? And they both die, just like it happens in the DCU. But then after that, the world mourns, and Metropolis, crime rising, all this stuff, and four Supermans kind of come out of the woodwork. None of them are the actual real Superman, spoiler alert. And then you learn some nefarious plans behind some of those false Supermen. But then you get Superboy too, which is really cool. Superboy was probably my favorite character behind Superman once I read this story. And by the way, so this came in a big like bundle that my uncle gave me. He gave me like a big chest of comics. Most of them were like one-offs and stuff that weren't very relevant, but there was the three-part series of Death of Superman. By the way, the DC Animated Universe also has a really good movie of this. I don't remember if it's like one movie or several movies, but it's pretty good. But yeah, you get Superboy, and they beat Eradicator, so that's neat.
Rock on.
And Superman comes back, and he has the black suit.
Dude, I love black suit Superman.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That was one thing that, awesome. That the Snyder Cut, I was really, really... grateful for. That was a nice touch. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's it. That's my number one. Death of Superman. classic.
It's a good number one. It's a sad number one. Almost as sad as my number one.
Yeah. Well, he comes out. He comes back.
Y'all have any honorable mentions?
No, I don't have any honorable mentions. To be honest, I haven't read many comic books, but the ones I have read are on the list.
I have too many, so I'll just list them right now. The Immortal Hulk, and it kind of fits in the same space that Swamp Thing does. The Infinity Gauntlet was on there because I'm a big fan of Silver Surfer, and that story was kind of fun. Why the Last Man was a Vertigo run. In Daredevil, I love Guardian Devil, written by Kevin Smith. Volume 3 by Mark Waid is such good writing. And recently, the Chip Zdarsky stuff in Volume 5 is really good. And I've also got The Uncanny X-Men in there, the Joss Whedon run. It's also really, really good. Of course, you gotta love like The Dark Knight Returns and stuff like that. Hush, Long Halloween, a bunch of Batman stuff in there. Court of Owls. Mm-hmm. Batman is always, mm-hmm. always solid. Kingdom Come, another great DC run with all of the old superheroes. Another Mark Waid written. Mark Waid is one of my favorite writers. Anyway, so way too many. There's so many great comic stories out there.
I went back and forth on Hush, but decided Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker edged out Hush for me. But Long Halloween is great too, man. Batman's a win.
Always.
Neat.
Well, Johnny, thank you for
Well, that's a wrap for today's episode of James.
Leaving that in.
You know that's my line. You know when I'm talking.
I was
in the script.
We had not gotten there yet. I was thanking Johnny for joining us.
Thanks for listening to us talk about our favorite comic book stories.
As always, let us know what yours are. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. You can also
email us at fwlspod@gmail.com. James, don't take it out on the audience.
I love you, audience.
You can also watch us every Thursday evening on Twitch. Join us. This is James. Bye. The best thing we could have done was just say goodbye and see you next time.